Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw. It all starts now on Sports Radio 104.3 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 104.3 The Score and your free Odyssey app. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, I am David Haw here in Chicago with Bruce Levine, who is in Arizona, talking baseball 9 to 11 like we do every Saturday morning. Today, looking at the Bregman effect on the Cubs and having spring training traffic updates on the 8s for the White Sox, just in case. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, David. How are you today? It was a glorious day here in Mesa, Arizona yesterday as the White Sox and Cubs started the Cactus League season in front of a pretty full house, an amazingly full house for the first game of the Cactus League, David. And where would you like to begin today?
Well, I want to begin today by making sure that traffic was light wherever you were headed and however you got to where you're going, because you can't assume anything in Arizona, as we found out yesterday. Yesterday, for the first spring training game of the day, traffic delayed Mune Murakami's arrival at the Cubs Sox game, as well as Will Venables. I just want to make sure today, how is it going?
Traffic was bad. It was really bad yesterday, and I had to leave the facility after Craig Council's session in the morning. I came back and I had to park like I think about 6 or 7 blocks away from the normal media lot. Everything was totally full and, you know, ready to go. But that's the fun of it and excitement of the beginning of spring training here. And Mooney made it, and he had quite a debut yesterday.
He did have a debut. He had a couple hits. One was sun-aided against his buddy Seiya Suzuki in center field. We'll get to that. But overall, yeah, the Sox have to be happy with the young players coming through. 8-1 victory in the debut. We had a lot of guys we wanted to see besides Murakami for the Cubs. Alex Bregman had a start. Jameson Taillon was on the mound. It was just good to see baseball back. It was just good to see on a chilly day in February, because it was cold here with the winds whipping, that there was baseball right around the corner, Bruce, even though it's not obviously the regular season, but it is a glimpse of what's to come. And there were some interesting developments on both sides, and we're going to get to some of those. But we want to set up what we have coming to this morning until 11 o'clock. We're going to be right here talking baseball. At 9:30, Corey Lee, the White Sox third catcher, will join us here on The Score. And at 10 o'clock, Hunter Harvey, one of the more intriguing bullpen members, new member of the Chicago Cubs relief corps. And I think when you look at what he can offer, it is exciting. 10:30, a little chin music, and along the way, your contributions. 312-644-6767. Call us, text us, let us know. We'll talk about whatever you want, except for the Bear Stadium project. That is on hold for this portion of the program. Bruce, what was your biggest takeaway from yesterday, the first day of baseball in Arizona?
That my birthday is over with, and I don't have to hear happy birthday from a lot of people. A lot of people, friends, a lot of people don't care. They just say happy birthday.
Bruce, that was fun, though.
Glad that's over with. And
time out.
Had a lot of fun with
time out. I'm calling the time. I'm tipping my cap. I'm peeling right here. ABS, Bruce, that was fun. When Craig Council, the Cub manager, acknowledged your birthday with the card and they sing to you, you should enjoy that. You should savor the moment.
Well, not all those people like me, so I have a problem with that.
They do like you, Bruce.
No, they don't. No, Don't ever look. All these people I work with are professionals. They're very good at their job. To the majority of them, if not all of them, are really nice people. But you know, people you work with are not all your friends, right?
I understand that.
They don't know your birthday, David. Do all these people you work with at the score know your birthday?
I don't think you know my birthday. I don't think Sean Sears knows my birthday. I'm not even sure if Molly can remember my birthday.
I believe it's one out of the 365. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, it is. Yes, okay. It is.
Oh, all right. I know we segued away, but you know, it was fun, and Craig had a good time with it. Everybody had a good time with it. And so I don't need to be a curmudgeon about it. I should just be happy that they acknowledge it and let it go. But, you know, I'm a curmudgeon. So
you are, Bruce.
What can I do?
And your response to that happy birthday just underscores how curmudgeonly you have become. Nonetheless, let's move on. Yesterday, someone much younger, Sam Antonacci, made an impression. He goes deep against Jamison Tyon early. I want to know this, because we'll get through some of the things that happened. Where does Sam Antonacci fit on the White Sox kind of list of prospects that'll get a look? And how could he fit, if he does, on the Major League team this season?
It's all open, David. I mean, look, Montgomery's going to play shortstop. And it's going to take a lot of failure on his part to not be there. But who's to say he isn't the third baseman at some point, right? And one of these guys like Antonacci, may draw a guy like Acuna are playing shortstop. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean that Montgomery's a failure. It might mean that defensively they're a better team with some of those guys at short and second and Montgomery at third. For now, Montgomery proved a lot at the end of last year that not only he had big power, but the fact that he played the position extraordinarily well, better than anybody in the White Sox organization would think that would ever happen. They had no idea he would respond like a big leaguer when he got his big league chance, and he certainly did that. Is he a proven product? Is he a guaranteed all-star every year? No, but for now he's a shortstop. But that doesn't mean these guys like Antonacci, Acuna, Madroff, all these young players coming through the system can't be better at the position and end up there. And with Antonacci, you know, that's one guy you keep your eye on because they're very high in him.
You start to wonder how many middle infielders they can accrue because they have some really good young prospects at that position. Also, with this in mind, Bruce, I mean, it's looming, but I don't know if it's relevant. Certainly not to this spring training, but as you ponder the future of the Chicago White Sox, in the middle infield, Rock Chulowski, the UCLA shortstop, likely to be the number one overall pick in next summer's draft, has started his season with 5 home runs in his last 5 games. So that is a guy who is, I know it's a couple seasons away, but it's fun to consider because he is on the way potentially.
Well, the one thing you know is you're a 1-1. You're going to be a 1-1, and you're going to be 22 years old. That means that you're ahead of the Bobby. I'm not saying he's going to be Bobby Witt, but there are a lot of comparisons. It means you're ahead of the Bobby Witt because you've already had your experience. You're not drafted at 18 and trying to make it through. Bobby Witts don't happen every day. Chulowski might be of that caliber. And if that's the case, it might be a very short period of time in the minor leagues, especially with an up-and-coming team like the White Sox, who he can grow with the rest of the young group. So we're not forcing him into the major leagues and at shortstop yet, but that certainly could be the future.
Let's go to the other guy commanding a lot of attention at Sox camp, certainly the guy who will help the major league team, Mune Murakami. He was on the scene, better late than never, and he didn't miss an at bat, but he was delayed by traffic as we kidded around. He has 2 hits. Bruce, this week has been a daily update on what Murakami has done at batting practice, what he looks like in the field, where is he taking ground balls, all of the fun. And he seems to be somebody who has been rolling with the punches and adjusting fairly quickly for somebody coming over from Japan. What have been your impressions, and how do the Sox feel about his first week in camp?
So my impression, watching him more with his teammates Certainly watching his BP and you know, hitting against White Sox pitchers up until yesterday. But my impression is that he's a pro player, that he fits in with his teammates, that there's no oh wow moments for this guy. So again, I'm not making him into an all-star. He's still going to have to prove that he can hit major league pitching on a regular basis. Doesn't have to hit 300, doesn't have to hit 50 home runs, but, you know, can he hit 260? Can he strike out less than once a game? Can he hit 35 to 40 home runs? That's what they're hoping for. From the makeup, I don't see any problem whatsoever with the guy. Fits right in. The interpreter is right there with him. He's kidding around with the other players. Doesn't seem to be in awe of anything. But all that talk and all that makeup stuff that I'm talking about, It means nothing until you start seeing regular major league pitching.
I understand that, and I think that goes without saying almost, Bruce, because we have seen other players come over from Japan, struggle early until they adapt. I'm just curious, when you look at, because everything about somebody who has this much hype and was the number one offseason addition to any team, but in the Sox case, this was a surprise. When you hear players mention his work ethic, what are they referring to? Or are they just being polite and they just saying, or are they truly impressed by the way that he has approached his job? I'm not out there to see this, and it's good to hear that maybe he's taking a business-like approach to each and every day. That should be the expectation, though. I wonder what stands out to make them say what they're saying.
Well, he's really working hard in his defense, David. You know, he hasn't played regular first base, been a third baseman. So naturally you say, well, if he can play third base in an average way, he should be an outstanding first baseman. That's a mistake, okay? There's no such thing. The positions are totally different. The way you have to scoop baseballs, both in the front hand and the back hand, the way you have to go after a ball from the first base position, totally different with the line right there to your left. So he has a lot of work to do, and he's been putting that in. Am I overly impressed that he's doing the work? No. I expect it. I mean, you're paying $17 million a year over the next 2 years for him to be an important player on your team. He's already been a pro in Japan for a long time. So it's not like a rookie. It's just like it's important that he, you know, works hard at that position, which he is doing. And I think he'll be decent there. I don't think he'll be a gold glover, but I think he'll be good enough. And again, I think first base, and we've talked about it many times, David, first base is a tremendously underrated spot on defense. It's devalued like left field is. And if you don't have a good first baseman, like the White Sox didn't have last year, it stands out. And they were the worst team in baseball by far at first base last year. They didn't have, after Vaughn went to the minors and got traded, they didn't have a professional first baseman the rest of the year. And it really showed, and I think they lost some one-run games because of it.
All right, let's stick with the Sox for a couple more things before we move to Cubs, Bruce. When you look at the outfield, Austin Hayes, homers, Friday, that's a good sign. It looks like he's locking down right field. Also in left field, Andrew Benintendi sounded this week a little bit more open to playing in the field if he's healthy than maybe some people anticipated. And in center, we heard from Luis Angel Acuna, who wants to play the outfield because he feels more comfortable. Bruce, are we looking at an opening day outfield of Hayes, Acuna, and Benintendi right to left for the White Sox?
Good, but I'm not calling that a star-studded defensive team at this point. Benintendi, with all due respect, has slipped. He used to be an outstanding left fielder, outfielder, could play all three positions when he was playing on a championship team 6 or 7 years ago. He's not that. Hayes is okay, you know, out there, but he's not a gold glover. And then Acuna, we're talking about guy that's played limited time in the outfield, very good baseball athlete. Most of his career has been in the infield. He's talked about feeling really good out there, but the proof is in the pudding. let's watch it happen. Let's not annoy him, right?
Right.
So there's going to be, I mean, what you just said, David, very good possibility that's the opening day outfield. Okay. So
it's not an easy roster from that standpoint because there will be some competition. That would be the opening day outfield. There are going to be some defensive liabilities, but you also might look at you're still in developmental mode. So I think Acuna makes more sense than somebody who might be a veteran taking some at bats away.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, David, they're as you said, they're still in development mode. I mean, when we're sitting here as baseball analysts and reporters hoping that a team can win 70 games, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really the low fruit hanging, right? I mean, it's a low bar that they're shooting at. Yet for this franchise that I insisted the last 2 years was in a rebuild mode, not just as rebuild, it was like an expansion team starting all the way over, which is insane if you think about it. But they've come a long way from that. Again, it's many steps here, and hopefully, you know, some of that starting pitching is going to start showing up this year.
All right, Bruce, let's look at the Cubs. Yesterday, certainly they lose, but we get the debut of Alex Bregman, and there has been conversation that hasn't really stopped since he started about his impact on young players like PCA, his wisdom and experience and know-how, how he wants to help the young guys develop. I think that's great. So you see him make his Cub debut, which he felt like that was all that he expected and more. And the crowd at Sloan Park, this is what Alex Bregman had to say about the atmosphere for his first spring training experience in a Cub uniform.
First Cub at bat, feel good?
Well, it's great to be out here and play in a spring training game with the Cubs. It was fun. Obviously, super cool to have all that energy in the ballpark. Yeah, great start. Let's keep it going.
He had pretty much a full house here. It's the biggest stadium in spring training either place. Are you surprised by so many people the first game?
Well, I've heard everything I've heard is it's awesome. So I was kind of expecting it to be the way it was, but definitely exceeding expectations for a spring training crowd, you know.
Bruce, you are there every day. You've seen every interview that Alex Bregman has done. He just strikes me as somebody who is a veteran, but this feels like it's maybe he's reinvigorated by being a Cub. Not maybe he's always wanted this to happen, not quite sure, but he does sound like a guy who is appreciating this phase of his career.
Well, you know, he talked about it a little earlier in camp, the great honor he has to have won 2 championships in Houston and then going to an iconic ballpark in Fenway last year. Now, segueing over to Wrigley Field, he just thinks he's had a, he's had a charmed way of going, you know, a great Houston organization on the build and then winning 2 championships, going to the playoffs every year, 6 years in a row, going to the playoffs with the Red Sox last year, now coming over to the Cubs on a 5-year deal with a no trade. I mean, it was important to him to get a no trade. He wants this to be his final home, and there's a good chance that's going to be the case. At age 32, plays to 37 or 38 as a Cub. Hopefully they're all good years, and he walks off into the sunset. But this is a guy who, through reputation and through results, has earned the plaudits that we were talking about, you know, this on-field, off-field leader, this guy that's a special individual who takes great pride of knowing everything about every player in baseball, every pitcher he faces, all of his teammates' strengths and weaknesses, talks to each one of them like a manager or a coach. Very unique individual.
You just described Alex Bregman. You could have been talking about Jameson Taillon, because there is a deep appreciation for all that comes with putting on that Cub uniform. And I think Alex Bregman spoke about it and experienced it for the first time yesterday. Jameson Taillon knows exactly what he was saying because he also referenced this when he was discussing how lucky he feels to still be wearing a Cub uniform.
Being a Cubs the best. I think there's obviously a lot of Cubs fans down here in Arizona. The history helps. I think making the playoffs last year helps. I think this is obviously a really exciting team. And, you have a guy like Bregman debuting in the pinstripes today, which is really cool. I think it's a mix of everything. But obviously the Cubs are like one of the greatest, most historic franchises in sports. So it doesn't really shock me.
Bruce, I'm going to use the word mystique because you have used it off the air and on the air in terms of this Cubdom, I suppose, and what that means and the effect it has on veterans and young players alike. How would you describe that I think, indescribable kind of culture or whatever it means to certain players and its effect on this year's team?
Well, look, historically, it's about the Cubs being one of the greatest franchises in baseball from 1900 through 1945. Okay, it had the most. The Cubs had the most pennants of any National League team during that period of time. So it was already established as somewhat of the Yankees in the National League. After that, in the end of the 1940s, came WGN-TV. And what did WGN-TV do that no one else except WOR in New York did? They televised all the games, right? Other owners called Phil Wrigley crazy for giving away the product. Phil Wrigley was a marketing genius in the sense that all the mothers and children coming home from school, would run home. The mothers would have it on TV. Every kid would catch, hopefully if they were lucky, the sixth inning on to watch the end of a Cub game. So they created something that didn't exist anywhere else in baseball. Women and kid fans. And, I call Wrigley a genius. I don't know if he knew that he was, but that type of marketing created the Chicago Cubs, WGN, eventually becoming in the 70s a superstation, took it to the next level, and there you have it. Atlanta Braves, Chicago Cubs, the Mets, and WOR. Those are all superstations in the initial period of cable. So there you have a quick history as to why the Chicago Cubs and that mystique of a ballpark have created this over the years.
And here in the present, they're right here on the Score, where you can hear spring training action continue this afternoon against the Rangers. Coverage at 1:55, first pitch 2:05. Cubs spring training coverage on the Score, sponsored by Sloan, the leader in smart water and commercial restroom solutions. Bruce, before we get to a break, I want to ask you about the bullpen, because it is something that we're going to talk to Hunter Harvey at 10 o'clock. There's not a lot of spots available when you look at all they did over the winter. They've got newcomers like Hobie Milner, like Hunter Harvey, Jacob Webb, Phil Maton. They've got holdovers like Caleb Theobar, Daniel Palencia. All right, Colin Ray's there too. I just named seven guys, Bruce. The bullpen likely won't have more than eight, possibly nine. There could be one spot for Javier Assad, Ben Brown, Jordan Wicks. I don't think it's going to be Porter Hodge. Certainly not impressive yesterday. How crowded is it down there in the bullpen, and what do you expect?
Yeah, you laid it out perfectly, David. Ben Brown, who would not only be a bullpen guy for other teams, but be a starting pitcher for many of them. That shows you the depth that they have on paper, right? We have six more weeks of spring training for injuries and for earning spots will take place. But the Cubs on paper are in a terrific spot. Ben Brown still has options. Wicks still has options. So those are things that you're looking at. Wicks came out with a strong argument about wanting to get traded. He didn't say it, but everything in the article that Megan Montemuro wrote last week with him was about him feeling that he needs to be a major league pitcher and get that opportunity. And I don't think he's going to get that, barring a lot of injuries.
More on the Cubs bullpen when we talk to Hunter Harvey at 10 o'clock. But when we come back, the White Sox catcher Corey Lee joins Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine is in Arizona. David Hall, I'm here in Chicago. It is Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
A hot dog and drinking a beer every inning. This one driven deep to left. Corey Lee, welcome back. Cue the fireworks here on Monday night. A two-run shot from Corey Lee. His first home run of the season, and the Sox jump out to a 5-0 lead.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
That was a highlight from last year, Corey Lee going deep. Thank you to CHSN for the highlight. And this is Inside the Clubhouse at Chicago Sports Radio 104.3. The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine. And now it is our pleasure to welcome in the White Sox catcher, Corey Lee, who joins us from Arizona. Good morning, Corey. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Really appreciate your time this morning. I know you got a lot of places to be, and it's another day in the desert. How would you describe your spring so far, and how you fit on this roster?
It's great. Obviously, you get sunny skies out here in Arizona. It's a little bit dry, but you got beautiful weather every single day. Also, can't complain. We could play baseball for a living, so that's also great. It's a great group of guys around here. We got a lot of young guys. We got a lot of talent, and just trying to play my game, just trying to fit in any way I can, and just playing hard baseball. And that's Chicago White Sox baseball that we're going to be playing. So,
getting to know you, Corey, over the last few years, I just admire the grit in your game and the way that you approach it, where you take what some players would take as negatives, use them as a chip on your shoulder to get better, stronger, smarter. Where does that come from within you? Where was that all created? How did that start for Corey Lee?
I just think it's always been engraved in me since I was a kid. I got to see my older brother play baseball all the time, and I resemble a lot of what he did when he was around my age, when he was in college, and I got to be a bat boy, so I got to see a lot of high-level baseball when I was 10, 11, 12, and I never took a day for granted. And just learning the game, I think being out on the field, whether it's a shortstop, pitcher, catcher, whatever it is, I think you're just going to learn how to play the game, and that's what I'd love to do. And I think I was born to play baseball, and I think I just treat every day like a new day, and I just try to get better. I try to learn something new, and a lot of credit to my brother and a lot of credit to all the coaches that's kind of been along my path.
Corey, you've been in the organization and in baseball long enough to know some of the realities that are difficult. Sox have a nice problem on their hands. Three quality catchers under the age of 27. We hear a lot about Kyle Teal, Edgar Carroll, the guys who are younger, but also you are out of options at this spring training. What does that do to your mentality? How do you approach this spring training differently, if you do at all?
I don't think it's a different mentality. I control what I can control, and that's me going out and playing hard baseball every single day. I try to not play GM as much, and I just try to go and play my game, whether, like I said, if that's in the outfield, that's in the outfield. If it's catching, what I love to do, that's going to be catching. And then just trying to take quality ABs every single day. And I know that I'm able to play at this level, and hopefully it's with the White Sox. But at the end of the day, that's out of my control, and just controlling what I control, and that's my game on the field.
Corey, you and I have talked about this, and I talked about with the great catcher Martin Maldonado about his impact on you when you were Houston and coming up as a number one draft pick. Can you talk about the mental side of the game that he worked with you? Martin was considered over the last 15 years one of the great defensive minds and helped catch on championship teams. What was that ability to play with him like? What did you gain from that? How did your game change with Martin in your head?
Yeah, it was special to watch him growing up. Obviously, growing up, I got to see him throw everybody out and be the catcher that he was at a little bit of a younger age, and he was still able to do it when I was playing with him. But I think it got deep into the pregame, into the homework that you're doing before the game, knowing the team, knowing who you're going against, knowing your pitcher. And then also just being a pro. He was one of the guys in the locker room that was talking to everybody, that was able to connect with one another, whether it's a pitcher, whether it's a position player, or even a minor league guy. I think he kind of left an impact on me of just treating everybody the same and being the same guy that you're going to be every single day. But I think a lot of the homework and the scouting reports that he was doing before the games, being in the meetings before the World Series games and just talking about what he saw and what he was bringing to the table was something that I continue to do every day, and that I think he engraved in my mind that this is the right way to do it. And I've seen success by doing it also. So it's just something that he's engraved in my mind that I'll do every single day now.
We're talking with White Sox catcher Corey Lee here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. Corey, I understand, is Walker McKinven working more with catchers this spring than he did a year ago, in using some of his experience that he was obvious with the Brewers and bringing that to the table? And if so, what effect does that have?
Yeah, he's been a lot of hands-on. We have him. We got a lot of guys. We got a new catching coordinator, Ross, that's been great with us also. But Walker's been outstanding for me, Teal, and Edgar. Really hands-on, a lot of receiving, a lot of just talking about the game, talking about what we're feeling. But at the end of the day, we're catchers, and that's kind of what we have to do, is just receive as many balls as we can and just make the moves that we can make. And whether that's going to be different for Teal, whether it's going to be different for me or Q, we're just trying to hammer out what specific move that works for us and how we can get enough strikes. And then obviously we're just talking about the ABS and talking about our game management. And I'm excited to work with him this entire year, and he's got a lot of good stuff. So we're all really, really excited to be working with him.
Corey, working with young pitchers, it's something that must be exciting because they're open to a strong catcher like you or Caro or Teal, but at the same time, frustration about command and making their pitches. What has it been like with the White Sox? We know they have some great arms, some outstanding individuals, as you and I both have watched over the last 3 years. But what does it take for some of these guys to feel like they belong there, be able to push into the sixth inning, and be able to, shake off bad innings, bad situations, and be an accomplished pitcher? How difficult has that been?
Yeah, it's hard, but all these guys are here for a reason. They've all battled through struggles in the minor leagues. They've all had success in the minor leagues. So just not trying to change who they are and just trying to solidify who they are rather than changing who they are, because all these guys are great pitchers, they're great athletes, and we're just trying to fine tune the things that they're really, really good at. Hammering strikes is our main priority right now, hammering early in the zone, just trying to get the 2K as fast as we can. But a lot of these things is just trying to know the pitcher, trying to know how to connect with them, trying to know what their shapes are like, what they're trying to throw, what their put away is. But just engraving confidence in these guys. It's a lot of young guys. It's a lot of young talent. And I'm lucky enough to catch all these guys and to work with all of them and just kind of give my two cents. So We're working really, really hard to get all of them ready, and I'm excited to see what we got this spring.
Quickly before I let you go, so you're catching a lot of different arms. We know about Grant Taylor. We know the track record of Sir Anthony Dominguez, and we know a lot of veteran guys. Is there anybody that stands out for, boy, nobody's talking about him? Is there a guy in camp early where, boy, that arm is alive, and I wonder what he is capable of? You're the guy who is the veteran of the group. Do you see any arms that our people are going to be surprised by?
Yeah, like you said, you got the Sir Anthony's and you got the Jordan Hicks that throw a lot of hard. Jordan Hicks has been looking great, pounding the zone a lot. Our newcomer Newcomb has looked outstanding. He has really, really electric stuff from the left side also. And then obviously, like we saw last year, we saw Mike Vassell coming in any situation. And he looks fantastic right now. I can go up and down the whole pitching staff and kind of just go about how they've been going about their business, and it's nothing but professional. And that's kind of the tone that we're setting here in spring is we're going to go out and we're going to get our stuff done and going to be done the right way. And once game one happens of season, we're going to be ready to rock. And from there on, it's a battle, man. It's a 162 battle, and we got enough guys to go out and fight for us.
Well, you are the consummate pro, Corey Lee. Thank you for joining us this morning from Arizona.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Corey Lee, White Sox catcher, the third catcher on a team that has a surplus at the position, Bruce. That's a nice problem to have. Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro, Corey Lee. I think all of them bring different attributes to the table. They have different strengths, maybe different weaknesses. It is the reality, though, as he pointed out, he may be still youngish in terms of Major League Baseball, but he is out of options. And I don't know if the Sox can afford to carry three catchers on the opening day roster.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to unless here's the trade that they have to make, David.
Okay.
They have to trade Corey Lee by the end of spring training for another catcher, right? Somebody that has options, somebody that has big league ability to play the position defensively in case Carroll or Teal get hurt. Okay, so even though you have two of the best young catchers in the game, Lee is someone that other teams have been looking at. And as you know, the commodity of catching, there's a shortage in Major League Baseball. So I don't think they'll have a problem trading him. I think making the right trade, bringing back somebody that can handle that position, that has contract control, I think that's what Chris Getz has to do this spring.
So let's remind everybody, though, quickly before we go to a break, Bruce, what is Edgar Caro as a major league catcher? I know that Kyle Teal looks like, I think, a star in the making. We talked to Corey Lee, and he has intangibles that are important, and he has maybe the experience that is hard to really quantify. I like a lot about Edgar Caro. I think we're all penciling him into the opening day lineup just out of habit. But what do the Sox like most about him? And is there any chance that he, if he doesn't have a great spring, is the odd man out because of his options?
No, I doubt it. I really do. I think they made a decision last year that Caro and Teal were going to be major league catchers and get catching time. Look, David, do you know many catchers that catch more than 115 games, 120?
Nope.
So with that in mind, I mean, what's wrong with Teal or Caro DHing from time to time, right? You can have them both in the lineup. They're both predicted and should be hitters, right? So they have that intangible. What they've been working on is their throwing, their blocking skills, their framing skills.
I like Caro. I think he's a good hitter for a catcher. I don't know that you would want him to be your DH necessarily, if that makes sense.
He wouldn't be your DH. He'd be occasionally in the lineup as your DH, okay, right? So in other words, get your best nine bats in the lineup every day, right? What does that look like? And if one of your catchers being rested, the other catcher's in there, you know, the DH spot is wide open. I think you're going to see, Murakami DH from time to time as a way to rest his legs and get him used to Major League Baseball. I don't think you're going to see him at first base 162 games. So that's a position, you know, that can be used stealthily. It can be used intelligently to get a bat in the lineup and get a supposed day off for guys, get them off their feet.
What do you
I think the White Sox will do that.
Sox fans, you agree, disagree? 312-644-6767. We'll get to your calls when we come back. I also want to look at what the Sox are looking at potentially in the starting rotation. Talk a little White Sox, certainly the Cubs. Hunter Harvey, the Cubs relief pitcher, will join us at the top of the hour. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The Score.
Now Cannon delivers, and Suzuki hits a high fly ball deep left center field, going backhill at the track near the wall, leaps, and it's gone. Seiya Suzuki ties up the game. Solo shot left center field. 1-1 Cubs and White Sox here in the last of the first.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score. Great highlight and call by Zach Zaidman Friday. Seiya Suzuki goes deep, Bruce. And now he leaves the team pretty soon. This week, he'll be going to Japan, headed to Tokyo for the World Baseball Classic. Muni Murakami, after a few more games, will join him on the Team Japan. And this will disrupt a lot of spring trainings. Before we get out to the phone calls, 312-644-6767, what's your overall view about the way that teams are treating this World Baseball Classic? Because it is exciting, but yeah, you would probably like to have your guys in camp as well.
Well, I'll just ask you this. Who won the WBC last year?
It was 2 years ago, right? And it wasn't it when
last time, yeah, three yeah, years ago.
Japan did.
Okay. I mean, my you understand my point, right? It's like, it's a great thing out there for countries and pride, and the WBC has been a big hit around the world, but it should be played after the season. It should not be played this time of year. It should be after the World Series. The pitching would be problematic then. No bigger problem than it is now, where guys are trying to get ready too early. Guys have pitched whole years at the end. Use younger pitchers. You know, have it, you know, when baseball's fading out, have it indoors at different venues, because it's just, you know, it's just not right. Guys coming back from injuries, important players for teams can't be told by general managers and managers, David, that they can't go, right? They just can't do it. It's just, it's not fair to them. They have a right to represent their country. It's a pride thing, but the real, you know, the real deal for fans and those cities is the regular season. And if your injury or something keeps you out for a month that impacts the season, I just don't think it's the way to go.
It's a fair point and a legitimate concern. And you watch with bated breath at guys like Jameson Taillon, Matthew Boyd going to their respective teams and doing what they need to do and what they feel called to do. So it's something to certainly to keep an eye on.
Well, David, what about Murakami? I mean, here he is in camp for, you know, a week, you know, five games, and then you don't see him again. Japan's going to be right there near the finals, if not right there with the United States in the finals. You're not going to see him for almost 3 weeks, right? Is there a more important player for the White Sox than Murakami?
No, there is not this year. No, I think that's a good point. It's a valid concern. You just kind of hold your breath and hope everything goes well. Let's go out to the phone lines quickly, squeeze in Ron from the South Side. Ron, welcome inside the clubhouse. Hope you're doing well today. Morning, Ron. Can we
Ron
get Ron?
Ron went out.
Ron's still there, isn't he? Good morning, Ron.
Yes. Hey, good morning, guys. And it's so good to have baseball back. Cooler, guys. Is it best for him? He's playing the second most challenging position on the field. Is it best for him to spend most of his time in center field? And, Bruce, I agree with you a couple of weeks ago. You said you didn't like to see young, inexperienced players platooning too much. But just overall for the team and for him and his development, is it best? And so we can see, can he play center field? So thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ron. Bruce, what do you think?
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, again, I'm not from the world of Matt Shaw or Acuna all of a sudden being anointed as a good overall utility player. I have to watch it happen. I have to watch these guys at the position. I have to see them be able to see a fly ball off of the bat and turn and run to where the ball is, okay? I need to see that. I need to be able to see them hit the cutoff, man. I need to see them being able to go to the gap, make the right throw. This is not, you know, outfield looks easy to people. It's not easy. If you're going to play the outfield right, and I was corrected by Craig Counsell when he said earlier in the week, we don't expect Matt Shaw to be great. We just expect him to be good at the positions he plays. Maybe that's fair enough. Maybe I'm too extreme. But to me, just anointing guys as they're good baseball athletes, therefore they're going to be good at that position, you're going to have to prove it to me.
We'll hear more from Craig Counsell later in the show on Chin Music. But when we come back, new Cubs relief pitcher Hunter Harvey will join us. It's Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, David Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects. And if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.